while you are setting up, I'll just call the case A240888, Hibbing Taconite Company versus Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Council, you are familiar with our proceedings. You can have a seat. You're familiar with our proceedings. You'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant has an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal at your option. These matters are being recorded and live streamed. That is the only recording that's permitted. Audio recording will be available on our website shortly after the conclusion of these proceedings. We'd ask that you identify yourself and your client. Before you begin speaking, let us know how we can reference you this morning. And with that, counsel, whenever you're ready, we are ready for you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is William Hefner. I use he, him pronouns, and with my co-counsel, Cody Bowder, we are here on behalf of Relator Hibbing Taconite Company. Your Honors, the purpose of this appeal is to put an end to the DNR's practice of ordering permit to mine amendments that violate statutory and regulatory processes that exceed DNR's legal authority and that deprive permittees of their legal rights, including their due process rights. Apologize in advance. I also have a cold that has taken up co-counsel residence in my body, so.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Apologies if that interferes with the argument. On May 6th of this year, the DNR approved a wetland replacement plan that Hibbing Taconite submitted under the Wetland Conservation Act for approval by the DNR in its role as the responsible governmental unit for mining-related wetland impacts. DNR approved that, again, under its Wetland Conservation Act authority. And what that wetland replacement plan was dealing with was the inadvertent filling of a tiny wetland on Hibbing Taconite's mining property that occurred during a larger dam buttressing project. Now, as I said, DNR appropriately approved that under the Wetland Conservation Act. What it did do improperly, however, was condition that approval on Hibbing Taconite also submitting a permit to mine amendment to incorporate this tiny affected wetland into the permit to mine. That was inappropriate. And there are two primary bases for why that was inappropriate and why this court should find on behalf of Hibbing Taconite. The first is procedural. The second is substantive. Beginning with the procedural, Minnesota Statute 93-481, Subdivision 4-3, and Minnesota Rule 6130-5200 are clear. If the DNR believes a change to a permit to mine is necessary and appropriate, it has to follow a formal process to require that. First, it has to serve a notice and order for a contested case hearing upon the permittee. And it has, Your Honor, please.
So may I ask, so with that argument, you're arguing you have to follow the statute and rule regarding modification, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So is it fair to assume then that under your argument, even if Wetland 35 were outside the perimeter, you provided something showing, oh, it's within the perimeter, let's put it outside, same thing happens, it gets filled, it's on their property, but it's not outside the perimeter of the mining area.
Your Honor.
That the commissioner has no authority to do what it did.
Your Honor, whether this wetland was in the mining area, whether it was outside, same processes for both. Frankly, the same processes for both under both the Wetland Conservation Act and the permit to mine authority. Both parties would have to do the same thing. In the context of the Wetland Conservation Act, again, regardless of where this wetland existed, if it was affected as part of mining activities, Hibbing Taconite would have to submit a wetland replacement plan to the DNR for approval, which is, again, exactly what happened here.
So the fact that there was so much dispute about whether it's within or without is irrelevant to your argument. Is that correct?
It's completely irrelevant to our argument. It doesn't. It's a distraction, frankly.
So why isn't it logical that if it was outside the mining area, not part of the permit, that a requirement to get it in the permit is part of the at least implied authority of the commissioner per their argument that you want it to be within a permit because that has other consequences?
Your Honor, I would submit we don't get to the concept of implied authority because the explicit statutory and regulatory authority is so clear, and it's also clear that DNR did not follow that. So, as I said, there were procedural. If DNR thought this wetland needed to be incorporated into the permit to mine, it had to follow the formal process under Subdivision 4.3 and Minnesota Rule 6130-5200, which, again, is the DNR's own rule. There has to be a formal process that the DNR has to follow, a process that guarantees the permittee is going to get the right to challenge that at a contested case hearing, a contested case hearing that the DNR would have the burden of justifying why that needs to be in there. Now, in terms of the authority, what our position is this wetland, the wetland impacts have been addressed through the Wetland Conservation Act process. There is no need to incorporate this into the permit to mine because everything that's ever going to be done to this wetland or to address the impacts has already occurred through the Wetland Conservation Act process. DNR has never given a justification for why it needs to put in, or at least not a justification that holds any water, no pun intended. What it says now is, through briefing, which is the way we had to figure this out because it didn't follow the formal process, but what it now says, it's important to incorporate this into the permit to mine because this has to be subject to future reclamation obligations under the permit to mine. But the questions the DNR has never answered with regard to that is, what more needs to be done here? First, there's two pertinent questions. What more needs to be done? As the briefs showed, Hibbing Taconite originally made a good faith effort to try to restore this affected wetland. It couldn't do that for safety purposes. It was just too. The slope was too much. They couldn't do it safely.
Doesn't the what more needs to be done go beyond the scope of what's actually before us here, which is, did the DNR have the authority to do this or not?
Well, I would submit no, Your Honor, because the DNR has, they're under Subdivision 4.3, there are five bases that the DNR has to order a modification. DNR has never done that. So it is pertinent, Your Honor, in that the DNR has to give a justification. When it wants a modification to a permit, it has to say which of those five bases under the statute it has for ordering that. So the what more needs to be done goes directly to that because the DNR has to justify that action. And in this case, everything that needed to be done with regard to this wetland impact has been done. So it begs the question, what more needs to be done? What is the justification under the statute for having to bring this into the permit to mine?
But we're not fact-finding court. We're not going to find that there are things that you've already done or haven't done. I mean, that's not for us to do, right? Your opening brief was very much no authority, and the reply brief was, well, we already satisfied anything, so don't worry about this anyways. It seems to me the question before us is, did the DNR have the authority or not? And then if there are these other things that need to be done, that's beyond what we can do.
Your Honor, I would submit that the problem with the fact that we're talking about the arguments is a direct result of DNR's failure to follow the process, which would have resulted in a contested case hearing, in which case these factual issues would have gotten worked out. But again, Your Honor, I think this is all still pertinent because in order for the DNR to justify, it has to fall within the authority. We're talking about two different authorities here. There's the Wetland Conservation Act authority it has as the RGU. It did what it was supposed to under that. It first said, Hibbing Taconite, you have to try to restore this. Hibbing Taconite tried to do that. When it couldn't, it went back to the DNR and said, I'm sorry, we're going to have to replace this with wetland banking credits. And the DNR, again, under its Wetland Conservation Act authority, did what it was supposed to. After some back and forth, it approved that. That is how this wetland impact got addressed. So that, for all intents and purposes, that is done. So then we have the permit to mine authority. And besides the procedural issue with this, again, DNR has yet to justify this demand in the context of the permit to mine. So that's why I keep coming back to that, Your Honor.
And your position is the DNR could have done exactly what it did, but it needed to go through that modification process, which would then give you the contested hearing and, you know, not exactly what it did, but try to obtain that same result.
If the DNR thought there was a change to this permit to mine that was necessary, Your Honor, that's exactly what I'm saying. It had a formal process that it had to go through, a formal process that would have allowed Hibbing Taconite to make some of these same arguments I'm making here, which is there's no benefit to the permit to mine or the DNR's authority to incorporate this property into this permit to mine, because there's nothing more that's ever going to need to be done with regard to addressing this wetland impact than more than we've done. And if there was, why didn't DNR do that during the Wetland Conservation Act process? That is the time it should have done this.
Let me ask you, so if we agree with you and we were to reverse, what is the disposition of this case? Do we remand it back to the DNR?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, we would ask that this court first strike that condition under the May 6th order that Hibbing Taconite needs to apply for a permit to mine amendment, number one. Number two, we would ask the court to tell DNR that if you're ever going to require a permit to mine amendment in the future, you have to follow your own formal process to ensure that permittees get the opportunity to hash these things out without, frankly, having to come to this court as we had to do in this case. And thirdly, I haven't spoken to this yet, but there is a very specific rule under the Wetland Conservation Act that guides how the DNR processes wetland replacement plan applications in the context of mining impacts, 8420.0930. DNR also violated that rule in ordering the permit to mine amendment, because what that rule, a rule promulgated by the DNR, says is the process that what DNR has to follow in approving these is you don't amend the permit to mine, you approve the wetland replacement plan, and then progress from that is tracked over the course of annual reports or operating plans that the permittee is already required under the permit to mine to submit to the DNR. And again, that's exactly what's happened in this case. After the back and forth about the restoration versus the reclamation, Hibbing Taconite has consistently included within its annual reports and its operating plans progress on how to do this. So there's no loss of control by the DNR. DNR is overseeing this and reviewing it and providing input on this every step of the way.
I'm still confused as to what happens in the event that we reverse this. Does the DNR have an opportunity to notice a contested case hearing to deal with this issue?
We think no, not in this case, Your Honor, because it's lost its opportunity, frankly, to do this.
What authority has it lost its opportunity?
There's no time. I guess our argument would be if coming before this court and losing on the merits would be enough to moot that. But again, Your Honor, I would concede that if need be, if DNR still feels passionately that this tiny wetland, which has already been addressed in its entirety through the Wetland Conservation Act, still merits inclusion, it could go through this process and we could go through all this again in contested case hearing. I would hope that would not be the case, but that is certainly a possibility.
Thank you.
But I'm still stuck on the same question. So we've got, I understand your 3 points if we were to reverse, but as to this particular application, the DNR approved it subject to a condition. Mm-hmm. If we were to say that condition is invalid, wouldn't the application go back to the DNR to decide whether to approve it without the condition?
There's no, Your Honor, because again, DNR said, Hibbing Taconite, you did everything you're supposed to under the Wetland Conservation Act. We would ask that we put a period at the end of that sentence because, again, we don't have any dispute about the Wetland Conservation Act process and what the DNR did and what Hibbing Taconite did. Both parties did what they were supposed to up to that point where the DNR added on this provision about the permit to mine amendment. So we would think that the order should stand approving the wetland replacement plan, but strike this illegal and inappropriate condition of the permit to mine amendment. And with that, Your Honors, I'm out of time, and I will see you again on rebuttal. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Counsel. Counsel, anytime you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Ryan Petty. My pronouns are he, him. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and may it please the court. I'd like to start with the why. The question that came up during the argument is what more is required? And I agree that is a question for the future. The question right now is, are the obligations triggered at all? Are the reclamation obligations triggered? And the reclamation obligations are triggered off of whether something is within the mining area. The mining area is defined in the statutes and rules as essentially anything that is impact that is used or intended to be used as a part of the mining operations. Now, that is a functional definition, not merely a geographic one. Wetland 35 could not have been a part of Hibbing Taconite's mining area prior to filling because Hibbing Taconite was not allowed under the Wetland Conservation Act to conduct mining operations on that mine. So the question fundamentally here is, when do the reclamation obligations get triggered? And the answer is, when Hibbing Taconite filled Wetland 35. That brought it within the statutory definition of the mining area, and that is why DNR required that permit to mine amendment to clarify, without question, that Wetland 35 has been impacted by mining operations.
So why not use the modification route where it is very expressly within the DNR's authority to modify a permit?
So 2 points. One is that at a very basic level, the legislature can grant multiple pathways for an agency to act. I agree that the modification procedures are one potential pathway that DNR could unilaterally, in this case, amend the permit to mine. But that's not the only way. DNR's explicit and implicit statutory authority under the reclamation statutes and its authority under the Wetland Conservation Act to approve wetland replacement plans is another pathway. Now, under 93.481 subdivision 4.3, if you look at that statute, that is really directed more towards very significant consequential changes to the mine.
Wait, I'm sorry, give me the number again of the statute. I want to look at it.
Sorry. It's 93.481 subdivision 4.3.
Okay.
So that subdivision discusses three possible changes to a permit: revocation, suspension, and modification. Two of those requirements would fundamentally prevent Hibbing Taconite from conducting mining operations. Modification, same thing. As opposing counsel noted, there are specific requirements that DNR would have to find to even exercise that authority. There's been a violation of law, there's a threat to public safety, there's a harm to the environment, and along with that come the requirement for contested case procedures. And that makes sense because there are going to be facts that are going to be disputed about that, and so we want those procedures in place. Here, there's really no dispute about what happened. Hibbing taconite filled wetland 35, and as a matter of law, which is why this is appropriate for a certiorari appeal, it brought it within the mining area, and it was required to amend its permit to mine. Now, fundamentally, let's go back in time. Let's imagine that as a part of this 2020 construction project, Hibbing taconite knew that it was going to impact wetland 35, that it was going to fill that as a part of the dam construction project. I believe opposing counsel would have to concede that as a part of that 2020 permit to mine amendment, the impacts to wetland 35 would have to be a part of that amendment. So here, DNR is simply requiring what Hibbing taconite was supposed to have done in the first place. Now,
so they didn't, right?
Correct.
So I'm still stuck on that. So you concede that you could have used subdivision 4, the modification.
Yes.
And the grounds would be that this was illegal because they didn't have a right to fill wetland 35 in the first place.
Correct.
Okay, so that is a possible path.
That is one possible path, yes.
Okay, so where is it expressed in the statute that allows you to require a party to file an amendment?
So that express authority derives from two statutes that are interrelated here, the Wetland Conservation Act and the Mining Reclamation Statutes. So the Wetland Conservation Act grants the DNR authority to approve wetland replacement plans. That is fundamentally what we are reviewing here, is DNR's approval of the wetland replacement plan.
So this is 103G.222?
Correct. Statute 103G.222, subdivision 1 specifically. So in that particular case, when a wetland impact is related to a permit to mine, that goes to DNR. So DNR becomes the sole authority that's overseeing all of the impacts under a permit to mine. The second is 93.481 subdivision 1, which is the mining reclamation statute. So in that particular statute, it says that mining operations cannot be conducted without a permit to mine. So DNR approves, reviews both the initial applications and amendments to those, or applications for amendments to those permit to mine amendments. So here DNR is simply exercising its explicit authority to require what Hibbing taconite was supposed to have done in the first instance.
But why couldn't the DNR just deny the application rather than require the party to say, you have to file this thing? I mean, it is an express authority to deny it, and you could say, you know what, you're not doing what you're supposed to. You didn't apply for this at the outset.
I believe DNR may have been able to deny the wetland replacement plan, but one thing I will note is, so the discussion that happened earlier about Minnesota rule, 842.0930. I want to note that those rules are under the Wetland Conservation Act, not the Mining Reclamation Statutes, because it seems to be that Hibbing taconite is saying, once we have satisfied our obligations under the Wetland Conservation Act, we're done. Now, it is true that Hibbing taconite is offsetting Wetland 35 through the purchase of wetland credits. That is one of its requirements under the Wetland Conservation Act. That's fine. But there is this second obligation that arises under the Mining Reclamation Statutes, because that is really where this requirement for a permit to mine amendment is coming from. So I can see that in this case, the DNR could have denied the wetland replacement plan, but here it was simply appropriate to add a condition to it.
Because they could have... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Because they could have satisfied their obligations with respect to the wetland by restoring it, or if they can't, you know, by credits, right?
Correct.
But the additional fact here is this piece that was heretofore outside of the mining area, in your view, because they weren't supposed to touch it, now has become potentially useful or may be used in a mining area as long as it's within the parameters of the mining permit. And you're saying then they have to actually accomplish that, right? It's the fact that it is being filled that becomes potentially part of the mining area that's a problem, not just compliance with the restoration.
Right. Once it has been filled, it has in fact been used as a part of the mining operations and therefore is part of the mining.
That's already happened by
correct.
The virtue of the filling is your argument.
Correct. And think about it. You can think about it this way too. It doesn't make sense for Wetland 35 to be subject to reclamation requirements before it was filled because under the law, Hibbing Taconite was not allowed to impact Wetland 35, so there would be fundamentally nothing to reclaim. As soon as Hibbing Taconite impacted Wetland 35, that becomes part of the mining area, that becomes part of the reclamation requirements, both once the mine actually closes and as a part of its ongoing operating annual plans. But it's the fact that it impacted that, brought it into the mining area, and it is that point that triggers the reclamation requirements.
And the reclamation requirements differ from what happened up till now because what are they? I think the argument is we've done everything that one would need to do.
Correct. So there are a couple of points to that. One is under their original permit to mine, there are some specific reclamation requirements as to what they have to do with uplands, which is what Wetland 35 has been converted into. One other requirement, and part of the permit to mine amendment application process, is any time that there is going to be a change to mining operations or an expansion of the physical boundaries of the mine areas, DNR is required to evaluate those amendments to determine if there's going to be some additional financial requirements. So one of the main problems is, historically, mines operate, they go bankrupt, and they leave the state footing the bill for cleaning everything up. So one of DNR's explicit authorities is to require financial assurances to ensure that when something is going to change at the mine, that we all know that it can be fixed and restored at the mine's closure. We know that now because it is part of the permit to mine amendment, and those financial assurances are in place now. I do just want to touch.
So the express authority you gave were those two statutes?
Correct.
Is that the end of the express authority, or questions?
That is the source. So, to be completely honest here, I think a lot of this discussion about the Minnesota rules is a little bit of a sideshow because we agree DNR cannot expand its authority by rule beyond what it has by statute. So the focus here should, in fact, be on the statutes.
This is where I'm having some challenges, and I just want to zoom out a little bit. I mean, I feel as though the argument that you're making, I understand why the DNR did what it did, and I understand the efficiency associated with it as opposed to using an alternate procedure that is set forth in the statute. But I keep butting up against Valley Branch, Otter Tail Power, the cases that say the authority that is granted by the legislature is it, and we don't afford implied authority. And I'm wondering how the position that you're taking is consistent with that precedent that we have to adhere to.
So for several reasons. One is that if you look at pretty much all of the cases where no explicit or no implicit authority has been found, in most of those cases, it becomes clear that either there is a very specific restriction put in place on the agency in terms of what it can do. So in the case of watershed, the question was, can you modify the watershed district enlargement petition? And the answer was no, because the statute says you can either enlarge it or dismiss it. Two options. Modification was not an option. In some other cases, that authority has been delegated to a completely different entity. So Hubbard is an example where there was the municipalities had the authority to approve variances for homes over the St. Croix River, and DNR had effectively exercised a veto power over that. And the court said, you have no implicit authority because that authority has been explicitly delegated to another entity, in this case, the municipalities. And on top of that, in Hubbard, the DNR had no actual enforcement authority. Here it actually does. There is civil enforcement authority under the reclamation statutes as well. So if you actually look at a lot of those cases, the reasons that they find a lack of implicit authority is because of certain specific either statutory limitations or delegations of authority to other entities, which suggests that the underlying agency didn't get those.
But here we also have another scenario, and that is the DNR has authority to accomplish what it was seeking to accomplish through a different procedure. So it's not as though DNR is completely divested of the opportunity to accomplish what it was seeking to accomplish within the plain language afforded to it by the legislature. So, my ultimate question is would this be the first case that where we would authorize? I mean, if we adopted the rule that you're seeking for us to adopt, would this be the first case in Minnesota where implied authority would justify an agency in acting the way that it did?
No, this in Ray Manigasco. Is one of the key cases. Now, again, I will admit implicit authority is relatively rare, but this is a perfect example of where it's appropriate. In Minnegasco, the question was, can the PUC provide retroactive rates from an unlawful order? And the answer under the statute was explicitly no, but implicitly yes. And just procedurally, the court looked at the statute. It found it ambiguous, it went through the tools of construction, and concluded that there was implied authority. Now, I understand that there is some language and opinions that says if there's any doubt that you rule against agency authority, but In re Minnegasco makes clear that the court should first employ its tools of construction, including to ambiguous statutes. And here, all of that points towards DNR having the implicit authority. I see my time's expiring, unless there are any other questions.
I'm struggling with the same point as Judge Frisch, and one of the things that if you zoom back on terms of the statute, subdivision 3 about amendment is really the commissioner doesn't take any action. There's no action point of the commission doing anything there. It's receiving an application, but subdivision 4 is where the commissioner has action that is being taken to then go affirmatively modify. So. Why is that reading of the statute not correct in terms of the authority of the commissioner?
It's certainly correct in that under subdivision 3, it is the permitting or it is the regulated party that is initiating that proceeding, and under subdivision 4, it's the DNR. But that doesn't mean that's where the authority ends. So it certainly can be provided explicitly in those scenarios. And one thing that's interesting about subdivision 4 is, in that particular case, there's not necessarily a contested case procedure if it's initiated by the regulated party. So it's a bit odd here that Hibbing Taconite is allowed to bypass that requirement for it to apply for the permit in the first case, which would not have any contested case procedures, and by bypassing that, get contested case procedures for something it should have done in the first instance. That is just simply something that doesn't make sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Council. Council, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Several points I'd like to address in rebuttal. First of all, I want to address Council's insinuation that Hibbing Taconite had every intent originally to impact Wetland 35. That's just not the case. The administrative record does not support that. It was an inadvertent filling by a third-party contractor that Hibbing Taconite then had to deal with in retrospect. Wetlands, unfortunately, are impacted all the time in retrospect, not with foresight. The wetland conservation
council. I didn't take that from them. Just in fairness, but is it the case? And they raised a question I had that had you in advance wanted to fill that wetland, that you would have had to petition, or whatever the right word is, apply for an amendment to the PTM?
Your Honor, this was all part of a project that was initiated in 2020, for which there was some expansion of the mining area, and Hibbing Taconite agreed that there was a permit to mine amendment that was necessary at that time to encompass what was an expansion of the mining area. And if there was an intent and that would have been affected, that would have been a part of this permit to mine, that permit to mine amendment process.
Right. But in order to intentionally do it, you would have had to apply for amendment to your permit.
Just as he did in the case with the other wetlands that were impacted as part of that.
Right. But so if at that day when a third-party contractor accidentally filled it in, instead it was like, you know what, the only way to reasonably do this is to fill this in, you wouldn't do it. You'd go and get an amendment to the permit to mine, right?
Well, we'd address that through, if there was no part, if Hibbing Taconite did not have any intent to include that wetland as part of his mining area, which it did not, which is why it wasn't a part of the original scope when it went in 2020, there would have been no reason to include that in there. It was outside of the work area that Hibbing Taconite intended, so therefore there was no reason to encompass that in that permit to mine amendment, which again, included an expansion.
Okay, I guess I'm not trying to play, I'm just trying to get a simple proposition. If you thought beforehand, if Hibbing had wanted to fill it intentionally, mm-hmm. they would have had to apply for amendment to the permit to mine.
If it were outside,
that would
which
be the process.
If it were outside, which again we don't concede, but if it were outside and if it were going to be intentionally impacted as part of mining operations, then yes, it would have been.
If it were outside, but you're saying if it were inside, you would not have.
If it were inside the mining area, there would have been no need to amend the permit to mine either.
Even in order to fill it.
Right, right. We'd have to go through the Wetland Conservation Act process. We have to get wetland replacement plans. We'd have to make up for the damage to that wetland. But if this.
So that's a point of disagreement between you two about whether an application to amend the permit to mine would be required to fill this wetland.
In what context, Your Honor?
Well, either outside or inside. Again, we get into this,
right.
Whether being within the permit to within the mining area
right.
is a relevant criterion, and I think you're suggesting it is with respect to doing it in advance, getting permission in advance.
If it were going to be part of the process that Hibbing Taconite was expanding or was buttressing the dam as part of its mining operations, if it would have been included as part of that, just as it was with some of the other wetlands that were affected at that time, it would have been included. But this is not an area that is going to, quote unquote, be mined, and therefore it's not going to be part of mining operations in the future, so there's no reason to include this in the permit to mine.
So it's not part of mining operations in the future.
There's nothing.
So it's not part of the mining area.
Right.
So, but it was in the past part of the mining area, is your argument?
No, what I'm saying is it's included within the boundaries of the permit to mine. But at the end of the day, again, it's not a relevant point for what Hibbing Taconite had to do under the Wetland Conservation Act. And if.
But it seems relevant to applying for an amendment to a permit to mine or not, if you do it in advance. It seems to shift whether it's within the mining area or not, the argument.
Right. Your Honor, what I would say to that is, again, if Hibbing Taconite agreed that it was going to be affected as part of its mining operations, just as it did in the case of those other wetlands at the time, it would have included that. And if it were not already in part of the mining operations, it would have included that within the permit to mine. But again, none of that is relevant to the facts that are in this case that are being challenged.
Anything else? Thank you very much, counsel. Thank you very much, counsel, for your arguments and your submissions. You're very helpful to the court. The matter is submitted, and we will issue an opinion within the statutory time period.